Welcome to Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. My name is Kathy Fogarty, and I have the pleasure of hosting our show, Chaos to Calm. In this series of programs, you will hear from people who are learning to live their lives in a calm and relaxed state using tools derived from ancient wisdom traditions. Ren Jue is a comprehensive path to wellness that works on opening our hearts and clarifying our minds. Ren Jue also has tools to work directly on the body and its energy. One tool, Yuan Gong, is a contemporary form of Qigong that melds graceful movements in meditation and breath to improve health and well-being. Our episode today is called The Mind, the Body, and Self-Healing, I Got a Feeling. And it is my pleasure to introduce my co-host, Bill McMillan, a retired psychotherapist who has a history of working with adolescents, families, veterans, and trauma survivors. Bill has been practicing Ren Jue and Yuan Gong style Qigong for many years. He currently is a Ren Jue Yuan Gong teacher in the San Francisco Bay Area and runs a weekly Yuan Gong class for people affected by cancer. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Kathy.
Our guest today is Diana Lyon. Diana also lives in the Bay Area and has practiced and taught Yuan Gong style Qigong and Ren Jue methods since 2009. Remarkably, Diana struggled with Lyme disease, chronic migraines, and severe multiple chemical sensitivities for about 15 years before using Yuan Gong style Qigong and Ren Jue to heal herself. She is now healthy and helps others in their healing journeys, applying the tools she has learned from Ren Jue and Yuan Gong. Welcome, Diana.
Thanks. It's actually really nice to be here.
It's great to have you. So, Diana, what was going on in your life that led you to explore these different healing methods?
Well, I was actually leading a very full life. It was very busy. I was the founding director of a national prison program, and I was on the professional staff of a chaplaincy program, a year-long chaplaincy program, and I was co-leading a weekly meditation group. And I noticed that life was getting harder and harder, and I was getting sicker and sicker, and none of the doctors I went to were able to tell me what was going on. And then finally, my whole life collapsed. So that was the sort of the beginning of the whole story.
And so tell us more. What happened?
I went on a long search to find out what was going on with me, because I had no idea, and the doctors that I saw also had no idea. But what I was noticing was that I had no energy at all. I had fevers on and off. I could hardly get out of bed. I had 4 to 6 migraines every week. I had rashes. And I had such severe multiple chemical sensitivities that I literally had to wear a gas mask when I went outside of my home. So I was very limited in being able to do anything. I had a lot of pain. And I you know, everything that had given my life juice and passion came crashing down.
That sounds like a pretty tough run. So you tried all different kinds of Western medicine.
Yeah.
And were finding that there were no answers there. Did you just happen upon Qigong? How did that come about?
Well, I finally got a diagnosis of Lyme disease, and that was helpful to have some kind of a name to put on it, so I knew that I wasn't crazy, which comes up for a lot of people with this kind of chronic illness. But I didn't have any idea how to treat it because, you know, I had read books, and I remember one big thick book in particular talked about people who had symptoms like me feeling so hopeless that a lot of them actually committed suicide. So for me, this whole thing felt like a life sentence, or perhaps even a death sentence. And then in the space of 1 week, I heard from 3 different people that I should try a very specific kind of Qigong. It was a very specific healing kind of Qigong. And I was desperate, and I thought, well, what the heck, I'll try it. And I went actually with a migraine, and I noticed that there was a shift in my migraine without taking medication during that first weekend. And I was hooked. I thought, okay, you know, I need to know what this is, because this is the first thing that I have found that could possibly give me hope.
Wow. So you would pretty much at this point given up all hope at that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm impressed you had the energy to get yourself to some kind of Qigong retreat.
Well, you know, some people have called me determined, and other people who, when they're mad at me, call me pigheaded. So
both probably true.
Both probably true, yeah. But it was one of those times when, you know, you kind of harness a particular quality you have in service of something that can lift you up out of the muck. And I was deeply in the muck.
Was it, I mean, did you find that transition or something changed immediately, or did this take a while? Because if it took a while, it also took a fair amount of faith.
That's true. Well, there was, it was kind of a both and situation. What I noticed in the first few months of doing these practices was that the multiple chemical sensitivities got significantly better. And there was a moment where I thought, oh my goodness, this is significantly different. So for instance, I could go into Walgreens for the first time in many, many years. There, people who don't have MCS don't have any idea, but there's like a pervasive scent through the whole drugstore. And there was no way I could even go in the parking lot. But I was trying to take different prescriptions, and I needed other people to always pick those up for me. And actually, I could go in and get them myself. And I thought, wow, this is a major life difference. It sounds tiny, but it was emblematic of me being able to have more capacity to go to different places.
Do you remember that as kind of aha moment of excitement that,
oh, yeah,
that things are really changing?
Yeah. It gave me so much encouragement, and it was very exciting. And it actually, you know, you were mentioning faith earlier, and what that did was it gave me some faith that if this could change, all of it could change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these small, well, this was a large victory for me, but what I have found, you know, since then, of course, I work with clients who come to see me, and what I find is that if we can have some experience of success, that really nourishes a sense of faith. And that faith is what keeps us going, because it's, you know, it took me years to really transform the chronic illness, and that's common, you know. So there were parts that were slow, and then there were parts that were quick.
That's great. I mean, so often when people have chronic illness, there is definitely this sense of despair of recovery.
Yeah.
And what you just said about having small successes, it's like planting a seed and then being able to have that grow and be nurtured. So, Diana, tell us a little bit about your journey into Yuengong-style Qigong and Ren Jue, mm-hmm. and how that has helped your healing journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what I did at the beginning was I went to an intensive, a healing intensive, which taught me methods. And then I think it was, you know, my pigheadedness, my determination, whatever, and also my desperation. Mm-hmm. I had tried everything else. It provided the sort of the fuel and the motivation for me to practice every day. And that was with, you know, the Yuengong style Qigong. And gradually what that did was it brought more energy into my system, more of the life force that was needed that could allow me to make the rest of the changes that would be needed for a more complete recovery. So that was the Yuengong's part of things.
So tell us more about that, the idea of Yuengong as a fuel source. It sounds like that's what you're talking about. Mm. And why we need that, why that's so important in order to really heal.
Well, you know, what I now understand is that chi, you know, what we call chi, which is our life force, you know, energy. It's kind of the building block of everything that happens in our body, whether it's on a physical level, a mental level, an emotional level. And when it's depleted, which can happen because of so many reasons, you know, genetic reasons and lifestyle reasons and nutritional reasons, environmental reasons.
Traffic.
Stress,
in other words.
You know, lots of different kinds of stressors. What happens is that our chi goes down, and really, you know, our systems have the wisdom and the capacity to heal ourselves if we get the obstacles out of the way, and if we provide the fuel that's needed. And part of the fuel that's needed is that quality of life energy. So as we bring it into our system, where, you know, I use an analogy, which is the that we're like buckets, you know, and we bring in all this energy, and it's like filling our bucket with water, and the water is the source of what's needed to heal ourselves and to keep ourselves developing and continuing on whatever our life journey is. But there's another aspect of this, which is that our buckets usually have holes in them. You know, these holes mean that the water leaks out of our buckets. And these leaks come from what we call in Renchway the patterns, unhealthy patterns, actually. So do you want me to say what patterns are? Is that?
Sure.
Yeah. Basically, our brains are set up so that they operate, and our systems are set up so that they operate through many, many, many different kinds of patterns. And these are laid down when we are very young, and they can continue being laid down during our entire life. But what we're doing when we do the pattern work, which is the Renshui work that we're doing, is that these patterns are sort of the software of our lives, and what we're doing is upgrading the software. And as we all know, if we use a computer or a smartphone, upgrades are necessary on a regular basis. And so what we're doing is continuing to make this software serve life and align with what's needed for us to have a healthy life as we keep going. And as we do those software upgrades and work on those patterns, what we're actually doing is healing the holes in the bucket. And then all the energy that we're bringing in can be used for the purpose that we want to use it for.
So, Diana, I've heard you talking about, thank you for that. I've heard you talking about how you have specifically healed physically from some of these symptoms that we ascribe to multiple chemical sensitivity and to Lyme. But talk to me more about personally about the emotional journey and how you have worked with that and healed emotionally.
Yeah. You know, for myself, I would say that emotionally, I was in a very fragile place. I was afraid almost all of the time. I felt very unsafe. I was in a place of not being able to trust my own body. There was a deep sense of betrayal. And also a lot of grief and anger, because what I felt most passionate about was not possible for me to do. Mm-hmm. I couldn't carry out what I felt was my personal mission in life, you know.
And what was that?
It was to keep working on myself and to help other people. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of a vow and an aspiration that I had since a very young age. I come from a tough background, and from that place, I've always been an activist. I've always been somebody who cares deeply about serving other people. And that's what I've gotten meaning in my life from. And so, you know, all of my work was centered around that kind of personal mission. And then I was unable to pursue that. You know, I was literally in bed for several years most of the time and could barely even see my closest, you know, people in my life. So I felt very hopeless and wasn't sure how to connect with what was most important for me.
You know, I go back to your, it makes me think of going back to your analogy of upgrading your software. And my experience has often been when I've upgraded software that things get really screwed up. They get confused. I don't know what to do with this new stuff. I don't know how it works, or I didn't do something exactly right. Did you experience any of that, or was it just a kind of blissful rising out of the ashes? How'd that go for you?
Very astute. As I was working with, you know, the software upgrade, there were many times where I felt disoriented. I have said many times since then, and often to clients or people who come to me, I say, you know, the healing journey is messy and nonlinear. And if you think it's going to be anything else, you're setting yourself up to suffer. Mm-hmm. Because it isn't smooth. And a lot of the time it wasn't blissful for me. That's kind of like the Cinderella outcome, but that wasn't actually my experience.
Understandable. Thanks.
So thanks, Diana. This has been great. So when we come back from break, we will continue speaking with Diana Lyon, who has lived with chronic illness for 15 years and healed herself using Yuengong-style Qigong and Ren Shui. Her story underscores the innate healing abilities of the body, the mind, and qi, and especially when coupled with powerful practices like Yuengong, Qigong, and Ren Shui. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. My name is Kathy Fogarty. My co-host is Bill McMillan, and we are on the program Chaos to Calm, the mind, the body, and self-healing. I got a feeling. We have been speaking with our guest Diana Lyon, who has healed herself of Lyme disease, migraines, and chemical sensitivity using Yuengong-style Qigong and Ren Shui practices. So Diana, during the break, we were just all sitting here talking, and, you know, I had remarked to you that in my practice as a naturopath, I see many, many people who come in with head pain, whether it is cluster headaches or migraine headaches. It's actually a major reason that people miss work, along with back pain. And I'm just interested a little more in your story about that, about your chronic migraines.
You know, it's actually a long story. I started getting migraines as a child, and my mother had migraines, and she was never able to get rid of them. I grew up with a mother who took medication regularly and was pretty immobilized by pain, and then I had the same history, and went to see a lot of different doctors, including migraine specialists and neurologists, and I had an MRI, and I was afraid I had a brain tumor, and the pain was crippling for me. And so that experience during that very first workshop, weekend workshop, where I experienced a shift in the migraine that was significant, really got my attention. Mm-hmm. And as I continued, I remember I did a retreat with my teacher, and it was during that retreat that something shifted in a much more fundamental way. And after the retreat, I noticed that I still got a few migraines, but they were more spaced out and they were much easier to work with, and I didn't need as much medication. And as I kept practicing, I devised a way of stopping the migraine just as it was starting. And so I used the methods to actually nip it in the bud. And then, after doing that for a while, I was able to say with complete honesty that I no longer get migraines at all. And that has continued for many years now. I have a lot of confidence in that, and I've helped many other people with getting rid of their migraines. So there's something very potent about these methods. And for me, it was a combination of using the Yuan Gong style Qigong and the Ren Shui.
You know, Diana, I know a lot of people that are dealing with headaches or any other kind of pain actually are going to be curious to hear exactly what you did. It's one thing to talk about the methods.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if you could, we can't see you obviously, but I'm wondering if you can say anything about what that would look like for people to see if they can start considering how it might work for them.
Sure. I mean, I was using the methods in two different ways. One was the way we would use medication. So to stop the migraine just in its infancy as I could feel it starting. And I would do something that we call squats. And I also did a method that was bringing in a lot of energy, you know, so gathering energy from everywhere and supplementing the energy I had. I was also using my mind in a very positive way. So I was doing the Ren Shui practices of changing some of these patterns, because what I noticed was that as soon as there was the beginning of an inkling of this pain, that there was a tremendous amount of fear that would come in. And the fear would intensify the pain, and I would get transfixed by the fear, and I couldn't, it was a loop, and I couldn't get out of it. And when I, as I had more of the energy that would come in from this Qigong, I was able to stay with the actual present time experience of, well, right now it's okay, and not go into kind of futurizing about, oh my goodness, this fear means I won't be able to handle it. I'm going to be in pain for the next 2 days. This is too much. It's overwhelming, and so on. And I was able to stay with, well, right now I'm okay. Right now I can handle it. And I would then allow the qi to do its own work. And so there was, and what that did, going back to what we were talking about earlier about faith, it built up some faith in these practices, and it built up confidence and trust in myself and in my capacity to meet this set of symptoms. So there was a positive kind of upward spiral that developed, and I have tremendous faith in it, actually.
Well, so for very fashionable in the culture these days is the whole movement towards mindfulness.
Yes.
And it sounds like that's a key piece of what you're doing here. You're being very aware of this moment happening.
Yes.
And moving then, instead of kind of dozing off in a way and just kind of settling back in, well, here it comes and there, and now I'm stuck with it. So you're taking this moment to moment and working with it, it sounds like.
That's exactly right. And I'm slowing the whole thing down. So as what I've noticed is that as I'm with something in each moment, that there's this built-in presence that develops. And it's a quality that starts to, when I'm not present, everything feels overwhelming and it feels like it's spinning out of control. And that's part of what you were saying earlier at the end of the last segment. But when I'm actually present with this moment and then present now with this moment, there's a natural slowing that allows everything to become manageable, and it gives space to the qi, this life force, to do its work. And it also is actually a transformation of a pattern of a very long-standing pattern of panic. you know, and of desperation and of urgency and pushing. And, you know, there's almost, it's like a retuning of the nervous system from being governed by this kind of, you know, our inner crocodile, which inhabits mm-hmm. our reptilian brain, to sinking into that calming effect of the parasympathetic nervous system. So there's a lot that's going on behind the curtain. And that's part of this software upgrade, is that there's a sense of finding that actually slowing down is safer, and slowing down is more connected, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. And it brings up the whole question of trust to me, that the more this begins to happen for anyone, the more they can begin to trust that, hey, I can do this again.
Yes.
Which then leads to some of the other qualities of the heart that might be useful. Can you say something about that?
Sure, yeah. You know, what you're pointing to is what we call the five essential heart qualities. And trust is that, it's kind of like the gateway. Trust is the gateway quality.
The gateway drug of health.
Exactly. It's the gateway drug of health. Yeah, beautifully put. And as we cultivate it and repeat it over and over and over, there's a sense of being able to count on it and being able to count on ourselves. So going from a feeling of, oh my goodness, my body has betrayed me and my life is in chaos and it's out of control, to, wow, I can actually find ways that I can lean on myself and I can trust myself. And what that does is, as I trust myself more, there's a sense, a very natural sense of that trust radiating out from me. And what I notice is that I start to trust other people more, and I start to trust life more, that there's a sense of opening to life. And then that leads to that second quality of openness. And when I'm open to life, when I was very sick, the only way that I could find safety was to put up very strong barriers and walls around me. It was like this fortress, and I still didn't feel safe. And what I was misunderstanding was where my actual safety lies. And what I started to gradually realize, it wasn't an intellectual realizing, this was an inside out kind of realizing, was that openness and trust were actually leading me to the safety that I yearned for and that I had always wanted. And so with that openness, my world started opening up. And there was, it was reflected, it was interesting. I had to stay in my home for many years. I had to wear a gas mask. I had literal and figurative barriers. And then there was this sense of opening, and I could venture outside, and I started, you know, there was a wonderful, amazing group of people who gathered and rallied around me because I'd done a lot of community work, and they were sort of very loyal to me. And I started being able to open to them. And this was a real edge for me. It was me opening to myself and to them, and then finding that I had been someone who had always defined my lovability as being kind of glued to my work in the world. You know, people loved me for what I did, and I had always done a lot. And what I found was that during that period of several years of deep illness was that I really wasn't doing a lot. I had no capacity to do a lot, and that people loved me anyway. And that was amazing. I would say,
who knew?
Who knew? Seriously, who knew? I had no idea. And it was, you know, and it goes back to something we were talking about earlier about being disoriented. It's like, well, how does that work? And I started kind of finding the parts of myself that I loved, you know, and really connecting with some inherent lovability here and some inherent sweetness, and that it wasn't about what I actually produced. It was just because I am, you know, just because I'm here, and that it's not just me. It's, you know, that, you know, I'm sitting at a table with three of you right now. Each of you, I feel so much love for each of you, and it's not because of what you've done for me. And each of you has actually done a lot for me. It's just the beauty of who each of you is. And so there was this kind of spreading out of these, you know, feelings of love, not in a kind of mushy-gushy way, but more in an openness and love way. And then what that led to was noticing the magic of life, you know, the, like, that each moment can't be taken for granted. And so I'm grateful for, you know, it's raining in this moment, and wow, I'm so grateful for that. I mean, obviously all of California is. But, you know, just to be able to breathe and to be able to have food to eat and to be sitting on this chair and be able to actually feel the chair under my butt and to feel the warmth in this room, you know, and so on, to go outside and see the beauty of the trees and so on. I, you know, there's this natural upwelling of gratitude. And then from this gratitude, I'm just, you know, kind of left with the awe that comes from being alive and the respect that I have for everything around me that's alive too and that I'm sharing this planet with. And then that means, oh my goodness, I really want to protect this planet. And, you know, so there ends up being something like my individual journey ends up connecting me with the journey of my friends and my family and our environment and this very beloved planet that we all inhabit.
That's incredible, Diane. It's beautiful. We need to take a break now. And when we come back, we will continue hearing this remarkable and just really inspirational story of your healing. Welcome back to Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. My name is Kathy Fogarty. My co-host is Bill McMillan, and we are on the program Chaos to Calm, The Mind, the Body, and Self-Healing, I Got a Feeling. We have in our studio today Diana Lyon, who has been sharing with us her story of healing from chronic illness. Bill, you had a question?
Yeah, I did. I mean, at the end of the segment that we just finished, you went through a very moving and beautiful description of all the different qualities and how they've affected you personally. Mm-hmm. And it's a striking description, and I hope people will go back and listen to it if they didn't hear it the first time. And it can sound kind of esoteric and kind of new agey and love is everywhere and all that kind of stuff. I think it would really help our listeners to know, how does this actually look in your life? How do you know this is working?
Yeah. So how does it play out?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I think it's really funny because anyone who knows me knows that I'm actually not a new agey person at all. Just this morning I was talking with my partner and we were getting into a conversation where it could have led us into kind of difficult territory where both of us could have gotten very triggered. And what I did was I just took a moment and paused, and I was able to connect deeply internally with that sense of trust and that sense of safety and self-love. And because I've done that so many times, there are some pathways for that are quite well established. And I noticed that my whole affect changed. You know, I started opening more, and I could hear him better, and I could see him more clearly. I could feel myself more clearly. I remembered our connection. You know, I was no longer in that trap of trigger, which, you know, may or may not be familiar to people who are listening. But
I think it'll be familiar. It is to Kathy, I know.
Well, it's territory that's very familiar to me, and it was really cool because there was we were talking on the phone, but I think he could feel it. There wasn't even a visual, and I relaxed and I opened and I listened better, and so did he. And our conversation was just lovely. It was a really deep communication as opposed to, you know, what it could have been. So, yeah, I have been finding that working with the five heart qualities not only helped me get healthy again, but they help me every day. You know, they help me when I'm talking on the phone with somebody from my internet service provider, and you know, they help me when I'm in traffic and I'm really feeling frustrated and stressed, or
How might it do that in traffic?
In traffic, oh my goodness. Well, we all live in the Bay Area, and there's a lot of traffic here. And so if I happen to be in rush hour traffic, and if I happen to be not have left myself enough time to get somewhere, so I'm nervous about being late, then I have choices. And one of the choices is to get really freaked out and triggered and, you know, deplete a lot of my life force from imagining all the horrible scenarios that are going to happen if and when I am late, and also, you know, throw in a healthy dose of self-judgment and, you know, beating myself up and, you know, and so on. And, you know, I certainly have quite a lot of experience with having done that. But I also have other choices, and one of them is to sort of be with actually what's happening in that moment. Notice the stress in my body, notice the stress in my mind, and apply some kindness within the noticing. And what I have observed happens at those times is that my breathing changes, my body gets less tense, my mind gets less tense. I drop the grip of the scenarios starts dissolving, and I start just being more connected with that I am, you know, a person who's doing the best I can in an imperfect world with the patterns that I have. And I might even enjoy whatever it is that I'm looking at, and I might even start feeling connected with everybody else who's also sitting in this big traffic jam. And then that becomes kind of a common experience, and sometimes it even feels a little bit uplifting and like a bit of a community. So there's, you know, it's a very different impact on my life force and on my stress level when I choose to do that rather than the first scenario that I painted.
You know, I thought you were going to go even a little further with that and say that sometimes you get to a place where you're in a traffic jam and you actually feel playful there. That we're all playing in this together or something like that.
Something to look forward to.
So we've just got about 5 minutes left. You've talked about some really beautiful things that have happened to you for this practice, and been kind enough to share some personal stories about how they've affected you and how you've used them. How would you recommend to people who are out there with some of the issues that you've had to go about dealing with them directly themselves if they can't find a teacher or something like that?
I will say, actually, in a very practical way, that some of us who are teachers do offer Skype sessions, and so we work with people all over the world. So geography is no longer a limitation if a person has a computer with the capacity to do Skype. But You know, one of the qualities that I've noticed has served me very, very well is a very simple one. It's curiosity.
Say more.
Well, you know, curiosity goes very well with the five heart qualities, and it actually goes very well with the Yuan Gong type of Qigong, because there's, you know, what I've noticed is that there are so many aspects of myself that I know nothing about. And, you know, when I was sick, I was focused on, you know, just everything that was going wrong. And that makes sense to me. That's how it goes for people when they're very sick, especially for a long time. But what I noticed when I started bringing curiosity into the mix, I started noticing that there were all sorts of other aspects of myself that I hadn't connected with. And so I noticed, for instance, that there were many parts of my body, just on a purely physical level, that were working very well. And so I was focused in one, and I wasn't focusing on the ones that were really doing a good job. And so that actually, you know, brought me back to the five heart qualities, right? I also started noticing that, you know, when I'm with a friend, I listen to the friend and I'm curious, just like this conversation has been listening to each other and then responding. I started doing that with myself, listening to myself and asking myself questions and then hearing the sort of wordless, nonverbal responses. So what I would suggest to people who are listening to our program is that that's a wonderful place to start. That if you... it's kind of a doorway in to more intimacy with ourselves. And that promotes a deep kind of listening, and we may be very surprised by what we learn, and we can use what we learn to inform how we want to move forward in relationship with ourselves. So this is kind of a getting to know ourselves exercise, and it can be done in bed in the morning. It can be done in the shower. It can be done in the car, you know, in traffic. It can be done walking in nature. It can be done anywhere. But it's a beautiful, not only first step, I would say it's an ongoing step.
So Diana, I've got a little bit of curiosity here. I think I understand about four of the essential heart qualities. You've talked about trust and openness and love and gratitude. Could you talk a little bit more about respect? What does that mean, respect? Like respect your elders, respect, what does that mean?
You know, it's interesting that you raise that, because we often call it true respect in our tradition, and as you know, and it, for me, distinguishes it from this kind of respect for authority, that kind of thing. It's a quality of respect that includes all four other qualities, but it's even more than that. I remember once I was walking in the woods, there are some beautiful parks in the East Bay, and I stopped in front of a tree and I thought, you know, I know nothing about this tree. I really have no idea about any of its history, but I just had a, you know, it was a beautiful big redwood tree, and it was a very misty day, and I just stood there and felt a sense of opening to the tree, and in some ways coming back to what I was saying before, curiosity, but also just this quality of openness and wondering and awe about this tree. And after a while, I just stood there, and probably other people were walking along the path, and I actually didn't even notice them, and they must have, I don't know what they thought. But there was a sense of connection with that tree that it was wordless, and it felt profound, and it felt magical. And it was something that really... reminded me of my connection not only with myself and other people, but my connection with all of nature.
That's lovely. And I'm curious still.
Sure.
Because you had a chronic illness.
Mm.
And how does the respect for the chronic illness and the process through it and out of it, how is that expressed in your life?
Mm-hmm. And just taking a moment with that, because it's such a, you're getting right to the heart of actually where the transformation was. Mm. That I think that in order to heal myself, I needed to respect every aspect of me and what I considered not me that was involved. So that included all the parts that were difficult and all the parts that were strong, all the parts that were easy. That included the wholeness of this, of my system and of my world, of our world. And seeing that everything actually fit together, even if I wasn't sure how it all fit together. So there was, I thought I knew a lot more than it turned out that I knew. And I had kept going to doctors looking for answers. And doctors did their best and couldn't give me answers. And what I found was that using this combination of practices from the Yuan Gong and the Ren Shui allowed me to find my own answers, many of which I couldn't put into words. But there was this constant movement and transformational quality that led to healing that is measurable and that is obvious. You know, I now walk in the world and work and, you know, am healthy. So that's, I don't know if that's specific enough, but that's really what my experience was.
You know, to me it sounds, one of the words that comes up to me when we're talking about this kind of respect is humility. And what strikes me about your story is that at heart it's a kind of deep humility, a kind of radical humility that even though you take on healing yourself, there's something much bigger going on here than you.
Yes.
And you kind of let yourself melt into it in a way and let it take over.
Yes. Yes. There's that. It's kind of a both and. You know, there's that quality of not knowing, you know, and allowing something that's bigger than me to, you know, trusting it to heal me. And there's also, at the same time, sort of walking hand in hand with a sense of my own power and agency and responsibility in this situation. So there's nothing passive about it. So there's that, you know, kind of walking together in that way.
Yeah, it doesn't sound passive. It sounds participatory.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
Diana Lyon, thank you so much for sharing with such heart your healing journey. And Bill McMillan, thank you as well for serving as co-host. And thank you to our listeners on Voice America Health and Wellness Channel and our program Chaos to Calm, the mind, the body, and self-healing, I Got a Feeling. Stay tuned next week to hear more stories from people like you and all of us here who are learning to deal more effectively with the challenges of daily life in a calm and relaxed state.